Buddha. Happy Monday, everyone. It is Monday, October 26th, 2020. My name, of course, is Rich Sabata, and you're listening to the Bodega Body Podcast. This is the fitness podcast for everyone. Every week, we are here talking about health, fitness, nutrition, and mental wellness from a rainbow of perspectives because, as we've talked about here before, there is no one-size-fits-all solution for anyone. There is no one right way of doing things. And I've got a pretty bang-up show coming for you. But before I get into that, go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rich Sabata. You can also follow Bodega Body at Bodega Body on Twitter and Instagram as well. And man, you know, as I mentioned last week, have seen a lot of great feedback on the new bodegabody.com, the Bodega Body apparel line. And for those of you who have not heard, the Bodega Body apparel line is apparel for every body. And 50% of our profits are donated to organizations that combat the issues that are barriers to health, wellness, and everything in that gambit. Issues like climate change, social justice. We've got our feature apparel line right now, which is the Literacy Series. It is a series of motivational t-shirts that is inspired by some of my favorite books growing up. The Full of Soul t-shirt, as an example, is inspired by the Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul series. Bodega Dreaming is inspired by Bodega Dreams. And 50% of the profits of this t-shirt is going to be donated to the Mona Foundation. So in order to find out about the apparel line, go check out bodegabody.com to pick up your latest tee today. You know, food is probably one of my absolute favorite things to talk about. And well, food is one of my favorite things in the world. Food is pivotal to life, to culture, to fitness, to wellness. And oftentimes we try to change the thing that is so close to us on a weight loss journey, and we end up making ourselves so miserable. And one of the things that I learned along the way is that healthy, delicious food is not an incredibly difficult thing to make happen. And some people out there might be like, Rich, healthy, delicious food does not exist. Well, I am here to tell you, good madam, sir, or gender non-binary person, that you're wrong, and you have to taste some of the great, delicious, healthy food that exists out there. And, you know, today, I am really, really excited to talk to my guest, Chef Camilo Sabella. Now, Camilo is a plant-based chef. He's a recipe developer, and he's a former contestant on Chopped. And honestly, he is a pretty dope dude. And my conversation with Chef Camilo focuses a lot around both of our experiences with food and growing up in homes where food was at the center of life and food was at the center of family. And the healthy, delicious food that we have learned along the way to find the healthiest versions of ourselves. And Chef Camilo talks today a lot about how to make food taste better, how to make healthy food be better, how to find inspiration for healthy food, how to learn those intuitive things that you know, gets passed down over generations from our grandparents. And I think you're going to learn a lot today about the food process, and not the bad kind of food process. So that is way more than enough for my big yap. This is my conversation with Chef Camillo Sabella. I am really, really excited for the conversation I'm going to have today. One of the things I haven't talked about on the show yet is actually growing up, my parents had a restaurant up in the Bronx. They had a Dominican-Mexican fusion restaurant, and my dad was the cook there, and I grew up around so much great food. I love food, and throughout my weight loss journey, food was so immensely pivotal. So I'm really, really excited for my guest today. He is a plant-based chef. He develops recipes. He is a former competitor on Chopped. Please welcome Chef Camillo Sabella. Thank you for being on.
Oh, thank you, Rich. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on and taking the time to speak with you. I'm excited. Yeah.
I'm very excited to have you. We've been working on getting this in the books for a little bit. But, you know, I want to get into your history and your background and all that. But I think the first thing is sort of acknowledging the moment that we're in and the fact that we're probably doing this virtually when otherwise we might have done this in person. So how have you been over the past 6 or so months in the COVID craziness?
Well, I'm just like, you know, trying to keep a positive outlook. It's been kind of hard and difficult, especially for the hospitality industry. It's very sad. Like, I've seen so many restaurants and so much of the industry being affected by it that it really, you know, not because I'm in it, it's because I have so many friends and family that are in it. And, you know, whether you're a waitress, waiter, cook, chef, you know, front of the house, back of the house, like, you know, we rely, you know, in the community, you know, restaurants that we go to spend time with our family and friends. And, you know, to see these restaurants in the midst of this, you know, suffering so much, it really hurts, you know, me. And also I feel like, you know, it's such, you know, are we going to have these restaurants survive, you know, in time for things to get better? And you know, I'm just trying to maintain a positive outlook. You know, as a chef, you know, I've been taking this time to try to, like, you know, work on recipes and, you know, doing a lot of social media, posting, cooking for friends, cooking for family members in the community, and just dropping stuff off and, you know, socially distancing and, like, meeting friends out in the park and, you know, spending some time and just trying to take this time out and use it wisely. But, you know, you still can't, in the back of your head, you know, feel what's going on. And kind of like, you know, I don't want to get political or anything. Yeah, I just feel like, you know, all these big name hotels and big name, you know, companies getting bailed out. And I don't really see anything for the mom and pops restaurants that have been suffering. So I feel that that's, like, so important to me to let people know, like, you know, what are these people doing at, you know, at these times? And I know they're open for delivery, but, you know, a restaurant can't sustain on 100% capacity. Imagine at 25.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting that you mentioned that. You brought up a lot of really great stuff. I think I feel so much, especially because of that family history with the restaurant business and me knowing how hard it is to maintain and keep a restaurant in quote unquote regular and normal times. And it's so difficult to get any business to start up and to thrive. And I think when you add this situation that we're all in, you kind of realize that these places that are gathering places for communities, the food ties us together, right? It's what, especially here in New York, like, crosses cultural boundaries. It's how we get exposed to other people's cultures and other people's ethnic backgrounds. You know, one of my favorite things to do pre-pandemic was walk through like Chinatown, Little Italy, and just, you know, experiencing culture and just experiencing different food. And some of that gets lost when we're focused on safety. And I feel so much for the hospitality industry because, one, it's low margin, but when you're doing 100% delivery and you're living in a seamless Grubhub world, those businesses are also taking a lot of money from the mom and pops. And, you know, that part of it is difficult too. And it's an incredibly challenging time. So I do recommend, you know, for folks that are out there to, you know, support your local restaurants and businesses that are open right now to the best of your ability. I know times are tough and money's a bit tight for all of us, but, you know, as best as you can, you know, if you can go get takeout from your local spot on a Friday night and, you know, it's one less meal that you have to cook, go do it because it's going to help someone stay afloat. But I think one of the things I did want to get into is that your episode on Chopped actually came out during the pandemic.
Yes.
So I wanted to hear about the Chopped. First of all, I love Chopped. I watch marathons of this show. They have so many different seasons and so many different episodes and themes. So I'd love to hear about your experience on the show.
It was really an awesome experience. I mean, it took me like 7 interviews and cooking and just like, you know, going back and forth to like meet with producers. And it was a great experience. I mean, of course I didn't win, but it wasn't about winning. It was about like just getting out of my comfort zone. I'm not a person that I'm kind of shy and always in the background and like, you know, always in the kitchen when I do large events and, you know, I'm kind of shy coming out of the kitchen and speaking to people, but, you know, it was me just trying to get more experience in front of the camera. And 'cause my dream hopefully one day would, you know, is to release a cookbook and to kind of like do a cooking show on healthy plant-based comfort food, you know, that, you know, without any refined, you know, sugars and like all that bad fat, you know.
Yeah.
So it was a great experience. I didn't realize that there was going to be hundreds and hundreds of cameras on me.
Wow.
So it was a little scary at first.
Oh, I bet. Well, like you have the hundreds of cameras, you have the pressure of the time, you have the pressure of this mystery basket ingredient. You have all these other chefs working around you, moving around. So I imagine that it's just pure chaos. But it looked like you had so much fun. And I think that that's the most important part.
Yeah, I just had the best of time. They were all the contestants, my fellow contestants were amazing. I had the best time. It was just an experience just to like, you know, be in front of the camera and actually try to zone out and try to really not pay attention to that and, you know, go like maintain your you know, yourself in that and, you know, have it, get it done.
Yeah, no, I bet. And it's so funny because I love to be whatever the food equivalent of, you know, Monday morning quarterback is and essentially say, oh, you know, this is what I would do with that mystery basket ingredient if I was up there. But I think that's a little bit more just about my passion of food. And I love watching that show. So it's great to hear that you had a great experience on that.
And I had one of my favorite chefs. I love Alex Gerasalli. She's amazing. And, you know, I was so honored to be on the show with her being a judge because she's one of my, you know, all time favorites. And, you know, it was just, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, I don't, you know, it's really difficult because, you know, I taped that episode 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
About a year and a half, you know, because it takes so long to get edited and put together. And,
yeah.
You know, it to me, it just felt like such a long time.
Yeah.
But it was like, I look back on it, I would do it again. And, you know, just as a learning experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, I want to take a sort of a step back, because you brought up a lot of great stuff about kind of your cooking philosophy, some of the things that you care about. And I want to know about Camilo growing up, and your upbringing. And I know for me personally, food is something that was always around. So I'd love to hear about your history with food and your experience with food growing up.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, my mom was an amazing home cook. My father was a butcher, and here I am, born and raised in Brooklyn, and I specialize in plant-based cooking.
Yeah.
It's everybody funny. Laughs at that. Like, they laugh. So, like, your father was a butcher. I'm like, you know, growing up as an Italian, you know, in Brooklyn, like, everything was surrounded by food, like the yeah. smell of food, you know, my mother cooking, like, my fondest memories, you know, is my mom, you know, before church, she would, like, you know, be in her house dressed, like, with all dolled up, whatever, you know, just like rolling, you know, meatballs and like making sauce, and I'd help her roll meatballs, and like as she would fry them and put them on a paper bag to get the oil, to have the oil drained off, I would eat them. So there was much more or less 30% less meatballs by the time she would put them in the sauce. hence me being 300 pounds. So that's another thing, but it was, like, I have so many memories of my mom in the kitchen of, like, just singing and, like, you know, making sauces, making desserts without a KitchenAid mixer, yeah. without any equipment, like, everything by hand and no recipes. Just, like, you put a handful of this and then you make this and you do this. And I'm like, you know, and the funny thing is that, like, you know, she would just be – like, I would be so surprised. Like, she would look in the fridge and say, okay, we're putting this, like, leftovers were turned into a different meal. Nothing would yeah. be, you know, gone to waste. You know, it's like using everything, making sure the ingredients are good and fresh, and just putting love into the food. My mother would always say, like, you know, no matter what, like, you could have the most expensive ingredients, but if you don't put your love into the food, because you're actually – feeding your family and friends, it's a piece of you that you're offering. You're breaking bread, you're offering them love, you know, yeah, you're absolutely. Inviting them in, you know, then, you know, the recipe is not going to be good, the dish is not going to be good, you know, you have to put the love of into it. You'd have music on, wine, you know.
Oh my gosh,
it would be like, it was amazing, like, so many things that I've, you know, she was so much a part of me becoming a chef, because, you know, it was just that time in the kitchen with her, you know, was like the moment that I realized that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. And it brings this, like, warm, fuzzy feeling to the sort of the pit of my heart, because a lot of that sort of resonates with me, because it was like that with me. I think more with my dad, because my dad was more of the one that enjoyed cooking. But you mentioned something around add a little handful of this and this sort of that old school intuitive cooking that I think is so lost in the recipe world, right? When we're looking at food on Instagram, we're looking for recipes on Pinterest, we're Googling recipes, we're trying to figure out what everyone else is making, that I think a lot of people lose sort of that intuition in the kitchen and not following directions, but kind of going with the direction of your flavor palette and what actually tastes good for you, and learning to balance food. What's interesting, There's a funny story. There was a couple weeks ago where I was making Indian food with my girlfriend, and we actually didn't have any like crushed up tomatoes that we were going to use, and we actually had a jar of like Whole Foods brand, and this might make you cringe a little bit for the Italian, but like we had a Whole Foods brand tomato basil sauce, that is pasta sauce, and I went in and I grabbed it and I added like essentially all of the Indian spices to it, and you would have never guessed that the base of it was originally meant for spaghetti, but it was absolutely incredible, and it made me realize that like, no, if we work on replicating flavor and we understand flavor, that you can kind of get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most important thing is not to be afraid of the kitchen and not to be afraid of like I try in everything that I put together for whether it be for a client or a dinner party, or a cooking class, is to make people feel comfortable in the kitchen to taste as they go. And if they don't have an ingredient, if something calls for broccoli and you don't have broccoli, but you have asparagus or you have string beans, don't be afraid to test it out. And don't be afraid to add, if something says lemon zest and you don't have lemon, but you have orange, take that, be a little adventurous and take that step to taste it and see what you could add and what you feel it is your palate. And it's I feel like everything is so perfect everywhere we look at. And I think that goes for, I'm a recipe developer for meal plan companies, and I it's difficult for me as a recipe developer because everything is to the gram, whether we're developing one recipe or we're developing 5,000 to ship nationwide, we have to have it the same taste and flavor profile. Also for food cost and for presentation. But I think it's important that people have fun with food and have fun in the kitchen, because it's like it's so important, especially for that family time, pre-COVID, where everyone was so busy, just to spend that time to help prep something and make a pasta or make a salad at home or make a soup. Just that smell in your kitchen, I feel like people should not be so stringent on and so controlled by what the recipe says, unless it's baking, of course.
Well, yeah, that's a little bit
That's
different.
crazy, But I totally agree what you're saying, because it's like everybody's so like, oh, I can't use this tomato, I got to use tomato concassé, or I can't use, crushed red pepper, I have to use chili pepper. You just kind of you have to taste as you go. And I think, that's where people, should really feel more comfortable and be more adventurous with.
Yeah, definitely. I'm curious because you're a recipe developer. How is it that your philosophy, right, and going from blank slate and vague idea in your head to actual thing that is sitting in front of an actual potentially meal or dish that might not have been created before?
Well, for many of the companies that I consult and work with, there's usually a nutritional guideline. So whether it be an amount of carbs, protein, fat, so I work around that, and then I build a meal, whether it be, I do mostly plant-based, but whether it be mostly gluten-free, like I always start with a vision in my head and take it from the unhealthy side of it and slowly bring it up to a more healthier version. Like if I would do a gluten-free pad thai dish, I would not use soy sauce, I would not use a ton of oil, I would probably not use eggs, I would use coconut aminos, more so mixing in from rice noodles, I'd mix in like lots of zucchini noodles to break up the carbs. You know, it's like a vision in your head of trying to make it healthier without taking away the flavor profile and without depriving, you know, your clients of, you know, the real dish. You know, yeah. So, and also I have software for that kind of helps me, like, you know, 4 grams of this, and, you know, I entered in a nutritional analyzation program, and it kind of helped me out.
Yeah, definitely. And that's actually really great that you bring that up, because I do this in my own personal life. Like, I, for the most part, follow, like, macronutrient guidelines and what I want in my meals. But what I essentially do is I start to come up with recipes on like a MyFitnessPal, as an example, as an app that a lot of people keep. And if in their recipe software, you can insert ingredients and it'll help you calculate like what the protein is going to be for that, what the carbs are going to be for that, what are the, what's the fat going to be for that, what's your calorie intake going to be. And it's actually a really helpful meal planning tool, because if you're thinking about eating healthier and you're trying to come up with stuff, start adding ingredients into that based off of ingredients that you know, and it'll help you sort of guide that along the way. I think the other great thing about what you're mentioning is sort of around taking the familiar comfort food and making slight tweaks and adjustments in order to create healthier versions of that. I think that for me, as someone who went on this big weight loss journey, that was sort of the key for me to be able to enjoy food. Because I think we oftentimes think that healthy food is bad for us, that healthy food doesn't taste good. But I think that like the secret to healthy food is learning to develop flavor. Would you think?
100%. And I think people kind of like get taken aback and feel uncomfortable when you take your comfort foods that you've grown up with and, you know, try to make them healthier. Where I've been in many family gatherings and many events that I've done, whether it be for 100 people or 1,000 people, you know, where I've taken like a comfort food, like say it would be, you know, pasta bolognese,
yeah,
or spaghetti bolognese, and, you know, adding like a gluten-free pasta and kind of cutting that gluten-free pasta with maybe a quarter or two-thirds of zucchini spiral noodles and yellow squash spiral noodles. And, you know, kind of building that around that and adding more herbs and spices and maybe throwing in fresh spinach at the end, where you're getting a substantial amount of food and your plate looks so colorful that it kind of takes you away from your chewing and the biting textural point of eating the pasta, where you're actually tasting the zucchini noodles with the pasta. So it's like, you know, I totally agree what you're saying with the, you know, like, you know, trying to make things like your favorites in a healthier manner so you can, you know, kind of maintain your weight loss journey that you did. And that's amazing, because like you, I've lost a significant amount of weight, and, you know, it's been hard as a chef, you know, keeping it off all these years. You know, I was over 300 pounds, and, you know, like when you work in a kitchen, you don't have time to like plan out your daily meal intake.
I can imagine.
You have to taste everything. So, you know, I rely mostly on like, you know, just adding things to certain items and certain, you know, restaurant items or things that I have on hand to make it healthier. So I will eat it instead of eating so much of that carbs. I'll throw in veg instead of eating, you know, the fried stuff. I'd bake it and add lots of herbs and spices, because, you know, I think all of us want to maintain a healthier lifestyle, but we don't want to deprive ourselves of of that fun and that flavor profile of all the food that we love to eat, especially when we, you know, venture out with our friends and family and loved ones to, you know, have a celebration or a night out. You know, it's kind of like hard to be the only one that says, you know, can you put the sauce on the side, or can you bake this, or can you do that? As a chef, you know, I kind of understand what the waiters and the cooks in the restaurants go through when you have a special order. It's a little difficult, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And that, it's funny because that's the number one thing that I hear all people who have been through some kind of health journey say. It's, you know, you have to make sure that you can make the process enjoyable for you and make sure that you find those things that are sort of close to home, and it's going to make sure that you're not depriving yourself when you're socializing, and you want to make sure that you can still socialize when you can and however you can. And I think one of the things that especially my nutritionist friends say, that life is all about balance. And you know, if you cut everything out cold turkey, it's not going to work for you, right? And it's about incorporating the little things as you go and doing what you can, because this is not a race and it's not a competition, right? Like, both of us, I think, every day strive to be the healthiest versions of ourselves, and we try a little bit better every day. I talked about in the episode that came out this past week that, like, I've gotten an extra 10 pounds on me since the pandemic, and I'm like, yeah, I don't feel great about that, but I also recognize I'm sitting down like 9 hours a day and I'm not as active as I used to be. So yeah, it makes sense, and I'm making adjustments accordingly, but I'm not beating myself up about it.
You also have to give yourself, you know, you also have to not be so hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has to understand that, like, we're going through difficult times, you know, we're, you know, trying to maintain some level of normalcy in our lives, you know, and, you know, it's difficult through a lot of, like, you know, I feel sometimes like the anxiety of this, and, you know, just going out is like a process to get everything ready, sanitizer, mask, and, you know, I'm like, you know, and, you know, I feel like people should not be so hard on themselves, because, you know, it's difficult. We're used to moving around a lot more and, you know, being out and about, and it's like we're in our house out of respect to make sure everyone else and ourselves are safe. Yeah. But, you know, it's like, we shouldn't like, you know, we should give ourselves some leeway, because, you know, in life, it's all about like ups and downs. Like, you know, absolutely, you might gain 10 pounds now, but you know what, you know, hopefully little by little, you know, when things come back to some form of normalcy, you know, will be more active. And, you know, you might want a piece of cake today. And you know what? If you really want that piece of cake, I think you should have it.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree. I keep this pint of like tipsy scoop sorbet on hand. it's like sangria flavor.
In my apartment, that would be gone.
And I love that stuff. They don't pay me to say that, but like, no, that stuff is absolutely great. You know, I'm curious for you, going back a little bit to your story, you know, being from this traditional Italian family, how were people reacting in your family when you started cooking a lot more plant-based?
Well, like, I don't want to put like a damper on things. Like, the reason why I got into plant-based cuisine is my father suffered from diabetes and had both his legs amputated before he passed away. And my father was like very, very handsome, like tall, like the hair greased back, the gold chains. You know, he was a butcher at a really big plant on Pacific Street. He, you know, my mother and him would get dolled up on Sunday to go to church. Like, you know, it was all about like, you know, food and going to church and family. And it's like, I think the main thing that brought me into not plant-based, but cooking healthier was as I was growing up, I saw what my father went through in those 3 years of, you know, having those procedures done because of his diabetes. You know, I wanted to kind of like cook, but cook in a way where, you know, I'm not putting two sticks of butter or frying donuts in bacon fat.
Right.
You know, I wanted to cook in a healthier way, kind of as respect to what my father went through.
Yeah,
and also not to have myself go through the same thing.
No, I completely understand that. I think before I went on my weight loss journey, both of my parents also suffer from diabetes. And, you know, I think about me when I was over 300 pounds and I think about the way I used to eat and I think about my thoughts at that time. And I think one of the things that my mom always told me, you know, she would tell me, you know, I don't want you to have to deal with this. I don't want you to have to go through this. And I don't think she necessarily ever explained what diabetes was or what it does to the body. But I think one of the things that resonated with me was understanding that she wasn't doing well or that my dad isn't doing well as a result of those things. And me understanding, okay, if I don't want that, what are some things that I'm going to have to address about myself? And that's not necessarily supposed to be like a scare tactic or anything because I hate to say this like this, but like, I don't think you should necessarily be afraid, but it's more of, you should just want better for yourself, I'll say.
Yeah. And you want to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So like, I completely 100% agree with that. And I think that I came, I don't use the word vegan for myself very often, but I eat 100% plant-based. And it's been like that for the last year and a half or so. And I think for me, the thing that was the selling point was sort of that health aspect and a lot of the reading that I was doing at the time. And this was already after I had lost a ton of weight. But a lot of the reading I was doing at that time was that like for long-term longevity, that was sort of going to be the best thing for me. Now, there's plenty of diets all over the world, the Mediterranean diet, that like still includes fish and still includes lamb. And, you know, that like it's a balance of all the things. So I don't think 100% plant-based has to be for everyone. It is for me. But I think more plants in your diet is probably better than less.
I think that's an amazing way to look at it, because as for me as a chef, you know, I can't just work at 100% vegan or plant-based restaurant. Like, not all meal plan companies only do plant-based, like only a few, like, and as a chef and what my experience is, and also for me as a person, like, I don't put a label on myself like, I'm a plant-based chef. I specialize it. I also do paleo. I do gluten-free. Yeah. I do low carb. I do, you know, and I think, like you said, you know, you have to find what's best for you, what your body reacts to best. For me, it is mostly a plant-based diet. But as a chef, like, you know, I do lots of events and, you know, they could be five things on the menu that is totally vegan, and there could be like three other things that are vegetarian, you know, and I still have to taste them. Yep. You know, do I sit down and eat a steak every day? No. You know, would I? Not really. But like, you know, like you said, you have to do what's best for you. And like, I just remember my mom always saying, like, she would make for the four of us. I grew up, my brother's older than I, he's 5 years older. Between my mom and dad and my brother and I, there was four people. My mother would make 16 chicken cutlets. And if we didn't go in for seconds or thirds, my mother would say, "What's the matter? You don't like my cutlets today?
Yeah.
You didn't have a cutlet." Like, and I don't think people realize, like, You know, you could say food is love and you could say made with love, but, you know, are you really teaching, you know, what you want as kind of to sustain in your mindset? Like, you know, you're supposed to eat and enjoy and nourish your body. It's not supposed to be like, you know, having three chicken cutlets at a sitting, you know, it's to me, like, I feel like, you know, growing up in this Brooklyn Italian family, it was, you know, it was so much beautiful and delicious food,
yeah. But
it was just so much of it,
mm.
you know, and my mother yeah. would say, you know, my mother would say, well, you don't know who's going to come over tonight for dinner, so I have to make, you know, what I'm making. Of course, she turned those, whatever was left over, into another meal, but it's just yeah. like, you know, she would be sad if we didn't go in for seconds and, like, you know, kind of, like, be, like, in that, like, just, like, eating the food like it was, like, unbelievable, which it was, but, you yeah. know, I don't think that's something that you could maintain when you're 15 and then when you're 50 to have the same metabolism as you did when you were 15.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think from the other side of that spectrum, I grew up pretty poor and like on welfare and food stamps. And for us, the making sure you eat everything was, I can't afford, you know, right. you not to eat. So you're going to eat everything right. that's on your plate.
You got to eat every last bit of it.
Yeah, you have to eat it and enjoy it. But I think on both sides of the spectrum, we're not learning the best eating habits, and we're thinking about the situation and our feelings and making sure that we are appreciative, and we are. And, you know, mom and dad, you know, if you're out there listening, I appreciated it, but, you know, I didn't learn the best habits. So, yeah, I feel so much of what you're saying. For folks who want to start incorporating more plants into their diet, maybe not necessarily going vegan or plant-based or whatever you want to call it, how do you suggest people start experimenting more with their food to bring in more of those vegetables, especially if they're not accustomed to it?
I think, like, for lots of, what I do for many of my clients is, you know, is I have one client now that she eats like a 6-year-old, like chicken nuggets, chicken cutlets, mac yeah. and cheese, no green vegetables, no green lettuce. Her only lettuce that she would eat was iceberg. So I'm trying to, like, you know, really kind of have give her a palette of, like, you know, what flavors does she like? If she wants to add a little bit of greenery or greens in her food, where would she kind of enjoy them? Would it be in a salad with, like, a nice lemon vinaigrette? Or would it be in, like, pureed, whether I'm making an Alfredo out of cauliflower and olive oil
yeah.
and nutritional yeast? Like, would she want me to throw in the greens into that and pour it onto the pasta and mix it, or like the bolognese that I said, a plant-based bolognese, or even a regular bolognese if you just want to incorporate more veg, substitute the whatever pasta you're using. I would suggest using like a linguine or a spaghetti and put spiral noodles. You can do them yourself and it's so inexpensive.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, if you have to feel comfortable, like, I, you know, I suggest doing it slowly
yeah.
and try to really taste what you enjoy and little by little add things into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really great. I think one of the things, and maybe this wouldn't be for everyone, one of the things I did on my own when I wanted to experiment more with food is I'd go to my local, like, Fairway, because they typically had a little bit more variety than some of the other restaurants they had uptown at the time, or supermarkets uptown. And I would actually look for vegetables and fruits that I've never had before. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna buy this and I'm gonna search what I can do with it and how to get the best flavor out of it. And I think that really helped me sort of broaden my palate and learn to experiment. And I was like, okay, I've never eaten a, golden beet before, but what can I do with it in order to, make it taste good? And what can I do to get the best flavor out of that thing?
That's a really good point because people kind of have this vision of food, whether it be green leafy vegetables or kind of like root vegetables, that they're boring, they have no flavor. But like you said, if you look it up and you say, I'm going to try this, but if you boil a beet, it's going to taste so much better if you roast that beet.
Oh yeah,
You know,
absolutely.
so it's like taking whatever you see and being adventurous if you can, depending on, if you're able to have that or, some people they might be a little squeamish about adding greens to their diet or stuff.
Yeah.
But if you take that and just like you said, just kind of Google and say like, well, I'm gonna make this, like, how can I make it? And like, just say like, if you boil a beet, whether you turn on your oven or boil it, it's going to take this the same amount of time.
Right.
But that roasted beet, when you kind of peel back the skin and everything is caramelized, all the sugars, and you throw some, lemon juice, some olive oil, some mint, and some red onion, you have yourself like a side dish right there.
Yeah. Oh, you're making me hungry. Oh gosh. No, yeah, it's so incredibly important. There's also the little secret of, and maybe this is better with like kids and more picky eaters, but if you want to incorporate more vegetables, my girlfriend and I have this methodology because I love mushrooms. She does not. She doesn't like knowing that they're there. So like we like cut them up into little pieces and kind of just like hide them in everything else. But as she gets them.
No, that's a great idea. That's amazing. Like I do that when I make like a mac and cheese, and I use either butternut squash for the color of vegan mac and cheese,
Yeah.
or I use like carrots and like lots of other veg. And people don't realize it because you can put like, roast some garlic and do some nutritional yeast and caramelize some onions and add spices like mustard and all that. Like you get that cheesy, like sour, spicy kind of flavor of cheddar cheese. And like, that's amazing. Like you incorporate stuff and you don't really see it, but so you don't see it, but it brings balance to the dish and you'll eat it.
Yeah, no, and it's like it's a real person's way to do it. It's not like, whatever like some health nut is trying to sell you, you know what I mean? That it's like, no, we gotta try to make it work. And I'm sure that works really great for kids, too, especially. I don't have kids, but I'm sure it'll work there
Oh
as
no,
well.
I've tried like, face to face, like one dish of mac and cheese that I make and like another dish that my family would make with all like the breadcrumbs and the cheesy and
Yeah.
like I try to make it where the creaminess and like I'll use like nuts and seeds, of course if you're not allergic, but like you could really go again like back to back and not really tell the difference of it.
Yeah, that's really good. I think I'm curious to your thoughts in terms of the philosophy of trying to create something new versus trying to create the healthier alternative, and which what version do you prefer or do you like to go with more?
I think trying to create a new, but I would say more so a healthier version of it.
Okay.
Because I feel like, we can all come up with new dishes and new ideas, but if it doesn't hold that sentimental or that kind of like wanting to have, like who doesn't want a bowl of mac and cheese at night? Like, yeah. Who doesn't want a bowl of like pasta with garlic and like butter, or like, you know, garlic and olive oil and parsley in it? Like, or like, who doesn't want to have like, you know, something that you grew up with that like comforted you, you know, especially in the times that we're going through now?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would think more so that has a little sentimental value. And not to say I really love to create new stuff and like explore. I do that mostly for myself and my family.
Yeah.
But for clients, I always find that they have certain eating, kind of like they eat a certain way.
Yeah, yeah.
And unless you make it like make them happy, because they don't want to get out of their comfort zone so much. It's step by step. Like, so I try to take what they like and they know and try to make it a little bit healthier for them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's great. It's so funny that you mentioned that. I used to work doing marketing for a big soda company. And one of the things that we learned is some crazy number, like 70% of people eat the same thing like most of the time.
Oh, and my God, 100%. Like, it's amazing. Like, people don't realize that. Like, everybody thinks, like, I can eat the same thing, like, Chinese every day, but I don't. But, I mean, or I can eat, like, pasta every day.
Oh, yeah.
It's so true.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's so funny because I even like find myself now in sort of the same habit sometimes, where we're like looking for something that's like easy to do, or we'll just be like, all right, like let's make some cauliflower tacos. That's like the easiest thing that we can throw together on a whim, and it doesn't take much time or ingredients, and it's easy but still healthy, and you know, it's sort of that habit food that we have. You know, I am you'd mentioned a little bit about this. I'm curious for your perspective on how people can sort of pay homage to their ethnic origins and ethnic backgrounds and still sort of, you know, enjoy their food in a healthy way. You know, for me, like I just said, cauliflower tacos are one of my favorite things to make, or sometimes I'll do like, just like a refried bean, but maybe not as much fat as it typically would be. So for you, how are some of the things that you do that?
Well, like I love to do, I mean, it's kind of like, I love to like do kind of like, growing up, I had, my mother would make this amazing like focaccia bread with like anything that she had left over in the fridge, like whether it be the ends of ham, the ends of prosciutto, the ends of cheese ends, and like, you know, tomatoes, whatever she had from the garden. So I kind of make like a gluten-free, healthier version.
Okay.
And I use that, and I kind of like, you know, my go-to is like you have that cauliflower taco dish that you love to make. My go-to is like gluten-free pasta, some vegetables, you know, make a fast bolognese, whether, you know, using some kind of, you know, I'm not a fan of alternative meat products.
Okay.
But I have a few that I really love that really don't taste, you know, you don't have much, there's not much of a different flavor profile, textural profile. So I'll use that, and I have like a few, and I always keep that on hand. And, you know, I always keep really good olive oil on hand and good gluten-free flour and, you know, and garlic.
Yeah. Lots of garlic. Oh my gosh. We go through so much garlic in my house.
it's like with my focaccia, like I usually take bulbs of garlic and take that top off and wrap them up in aluminum foil with olive oil and pink Himalayan salt and just roast it. And then I break that up when it comes out and I serve it with the focaccia bread. And it's like, it's amazing. Like little things like that you could, you know, either make ahead of time or like it's just, you know, it brings back really great memories.
Yeah, definitely. What kind of gluten-free flour are you using?
Well, you know, like you say, you don't want to bring up the certain brands, but I'll bring like I personally love Bob's Red Mill.
Yeah, they have a monopoly on really great proof products.
Yeah, and I have to say, but I to be totally honest, when I make my focaccia, I just don't use that. I use a mixture of chickpea flour, rice flour, and tapioca to make sure the fluffiness of the focaccia has that taste, the same taste as what I enjoyed when I was growing up. And for the meat, alternative meat products, I really love Light Life.
Oh, yeah. Same.
I mean, I really do. Like, I love their bratwurst. I love their plant-based ground. I mean, I hate to, like, you know, I don't want to, like, say, but I do use them in a lot of things that I make for family, for people that really, you know, want some type of, how do you say it? Taste of that meatiness or that protein aspect of their dish, you know.
Yeah, some of the alternative meats have like a weird aftertaste to them, and I do like the
and a gummy weird kind of like fibrous, you know. And I'm not really a fan of that. Like, I'd rather make my own mixture, whether I'm making like a cutlet or a Thanksgiving loaf, a plant-based, rosemary, lentil or whatever it is. Like, I'd rather make my own mixture because, I really don't like all that, all the ingredients that they have that I can't pronounce.
Yeah.
So I usually, because I feel like you're just eating, foods that are processed. So what's the use,
Yeah. Definitely, I'm gonna have to grab that focaccia recipe from you, because listen, my girlfriend, I'm more of the cook. My girlfriend loves making the breads and stuff, and so that is great. We're probably gonna definitely do that. But also Light Life, if you want to send us a check, just let us know.
Exactly. And what is that sorbet that you like?
Oh, the Tipsy Scoop.
Tipsy Scoop, if you want to have it some, some kind of ambassadors, you can just let us know.
Oh gosh. The last thing I'll ask you here before I let you go is I think how do you think that people can learn more of the things and go out there and do some of the stuff that your mom taught you, and some of that more intuitive thing in the kitchen? Because I think that, as we talk about all these things, and there's so many different ways to experiment and to learn, that I think some folks might be a little bit sort of intimidated at first glance. But I think walking away with a helpful tip around that might be really helpful.
Well, I specialize in plant-based and vegan cuisine before it was trendy and before all the stars got on the bandwagon. I mean, I was doing vegan food 30 years ago, and we didn't have the internet then.
Wow.
We didn't have all this. And I just really think that, since people are home now and they're, they want to have that kind of great feeling and the feeling of comfort, maybe Google something and kind of see if they have a tutorial that could kind of help you. It's everything on YouTube, whether it be knife skills, whether it be, making a sauce or a dressing, you could find step-by-step, tutorials on anything that would make it easier. And also to whether you're quarantining with family or, quarantining with a significant other, make it a night in for you guys, and have fun and make sure you have, you kind of research it, and you look at it online and pick out what you want to do, and just make sure you have the ingredients that you need, and just really have fun and make it like a, you know, a night where you guys like share, you know, maybe one person could prep and cut stuff and the other person could, you know, start doing another part of the recipe, you know, and follow the tutorial and follow the instructions. And like, you know, at the end, like while you're sitting down for the meal, I feel like, you know, people would feel more comfortable and a sense of accomplishment that they kind of like, you know, made something, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the things I've talked about before is the fact that me and my significant other, we have a shared Pinterest board and we save ideas to there all the time. And sometimes we like look at the way they write up recipes and we're like, okay, we probably wouldn't use that because we don't necessarily like that ingredient, but maybe we could substitute this. And even if we're not following that recipe to the T, we got the inspiration from that Pinterest board and we, you know, we have fun doing it together. I think what you said is so perfectly magical, is that like when you're doing this together with someone, the process is so much more fun and it's so much more enjoyable and you feel this really great, like warming sense of accomplishment once you're done.
And not only that, you're like, I feel like everybody like nowadays is making sourdough bread, is making baking. Like there was a time during quarantine that I couldn't get flour. Like I'd have, like, you know, so I feel like, not only that, like, I feel like, you know, whomever and, you know, when you're cooking with that person or with that, with the members of your family, you know, the smell in the kitchen and like just spending time with them just to get your mind away from whatever's happening, you know, around us. It's just like, it's just a form of like, you know, kind of like giving off that love and like, you know, just putting love into the food and it comes out so much better. And like you said, you might not want to use whatever ingredients that the recipe is using, but you could use, you know, you could kind of get your idea, whether it be if you don't want to use pineapple in that cauliflower taco and you want to instead use jicama or pear or peach, you know, like try it. Like, you know, it's like, you know, and I feel like, you know, the more people get like comfortable in the kitchen, I just feel like it brings out more of that family time and, you know, that time where people are not so much on their phones.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's so key, especially with, you know, the way the news cycles go these days.
Yeah, we won't go there today.
Oh gosh. Well, Camilo, this was absolutely fantastic. Where can the people of the internet find you? How can they work with you?
They can find me on chefcamilosabella.com. They could also find me on Instagram, on Facebook, the same chefcamilosabella.com. And hopefully, you know, looking for a publisher for the cookbook, working on recipes. So hopefully, you know, I you know, can publish, like my dream of is to publish like healthy, you know, versions of comfort food that you enjoy growing up in a healthier way.
Yeah, you sign me up for the pre-order list, because I'll be one of the first to order a copy, because that sounds absolutely fantastic. Well, this was absolutely great. You are always welcome to come back to the show if you ever want to. You know, I loved talking
Thank
food
you
with
so
you.
Much. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. I love your post and I really like, you know, I think, you know, so much of what's going on now is like, you know, to have stories that have such inspiration of like, whether it be losing weight or, you know, kind of moving forward in any kind of obstacle that people have, like, is always a great story and great to be a part of.
Well, absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate the kind words as well. Well, that does it for this week's show. Thank you so much for listening. And thanks again to Chef Camilo Sabella.
Thanks again.
Let's get it. Hey, yo, Icon, what you got?
I'm back in rare form, nigga. I said I'm back in rare form, nigga. Yo, listen, I said I came from the bottom. You an elevator, baby. The struggle made us humble and genuinely crazy. Yo, silver spoon never. I was raised in the living room. All day smoking haze, praying that I get it soon. can't walk in my butters. They only fit G's. Nigga, my wrist freeze. Niggas play Superman and get Chris Reeved. All from a text message. I have your girl on you. You be stretched out before you send your next message. I don't like niggas. Beat around the bush for what? I'm really nice, nigga. Ask around and look them up. I'm in a deli with a bottle trying to see what's goody. Yeti side, streets cold. You gon' need your
okay, money. None of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, say lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga. I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby. I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, say lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga. I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby. I don't need a bride.
I feel like a precious pebble lodged under the sea. Since I was 8, I knew a 9 to 5 wasn't for me. Shit ain't always how you want it to be. That's why I gotta work hard. My ancestors had to run to be free. At 15, I was running the streets, drinking liquor, puffing the greets, cutting from school, fucking with freaks. By 21, I was sunk in the seat. G-Ride, bumping some beats, probably looking for something to eat. During my childhood, nothing was sweet. I wore ponies to school. The mother niggas had ups on their feet. It never fazed me though. I knew I was more intelligent, and the gift I had made it even more relevant. When I rap, I touch many like a known therapist, cause I'm packed with more passion than a gold medalist. I say something, they gon' jack it, nigga, no letterman. I can pop at any time, shit, there's no telling it.
Okay, none of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, say lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. I said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nice, say lied. Must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby,